It was 2004, and I had moved to Thailand to do volunteer work. This was the seventh most deadly disaster in recorded history. Quarter of a million people died. A lot of people, when I told them I was moving to Thailand, were a little worried because they're like, all this just happened, and we still don't know if it's going to happen again. Nobody knew the first wave was coming. At any point, this could all just repeat. You know that moment where, like, you're having a terrible dream and, like, something's after you, but then you
Absolutely.
wake up and everything's fine? I had the exact opposite of that. I woke up into the nightmare, 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 nightmare.
From the dawn of the spoken word, storytelling has been the backbone of human culture, warning of looming dangers and evoking our most personal fears. What you're about to hear are the real-life experiences of everyday people, brave enough to share their terrifying tales. Tales where the horror hits close to home. I'm your host, Danny. Welcome to the Hometown Horrors Podcast. Listen, if you dare.
Welcome to the Hometown Horrors Podcast, everybody. Today we have Ryan Estrada hailing all the way from South Korea. And boy, has he got some tales for you today.
Yeah, I got a couple of wild ones.
And on April Fool's, no less. I feel it's only appropriate since I had to cancel the first time, scheduling conflict on the second time, and here we are, third time's the charm.
And by scheduling conflict, of course, you mean I fell fast asleep and slept entirely through our meeting, and you're being polite.
Well, that's the unfortunate thing being in separate time zones, you know what I mean? Like, it was 6:30 for you. I wouldn't want to do that to anybody, dog. I used to wake up all the time. It's horrific.
Yeah, but I've had some wild experiences in my days. I'm a world traveling cartoonist for a long time. I moved to a new country every year, so I have some wild stories. I brought a couple here for you today. You can tell me what you want me to do with them. I have one story that I've told many, many times, made a comic about the most terrifying night of my life. And I also have another story for you that I've never told publicly before because I'm not entirely sure if it's true. It's something that my mother tells me about my childhood that I've never really told, but I'm happy to tell it today. So I have a story about how I faced down the apocalypse. Now, it was April Fool's Day, but this is a thing that actually happened to me. And to kind of tease you into the story, I want you to imagine, you know, that moment where, like, you're having a terrible dream and, like, something's after you and you can't breathe because you know something awful is going to happen.
Absolutely.
But then you wake up and everything's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything's good. It was all a dream. I had the exact opposite of that, where in my dream, everything was cool. I was chill. I was lying on the beach in the sand between my toes, sun in my face, chilling out. And then I felt kind of like the outside world creeping in. Like, for some reason, I felt something scratching across my chest, like something alive was crawling all over me, and I didn't know what was happening. And then I woke up into the nightmare. It was 2004, and I had moved to Thailand to do volunteer work. This was the seventh most deadly disaster in recorded history. A quarter of a million people died. And I quit my job out there to see anything I could do to help. And a lot of people, when I told them I was moving to Thailand, were a little worried because they're like, all this just happened and we still don't know if it's going to happen again. Nobody knew the first wave was coming. You know, at any point, this could all just repeat. And as I got there, it was always kind of that feeling. Everyone was nervous. Everyone was scared. Everyone that lived there had been through the most traumatic thing they've ever been through. Even as I was working, like hauling off the remains of a hotel that had fallen down, there were dive teams just bringing up bodies constantly. At one point, I worked in the children's center. While the parents are working, I'm trying to keep the kids happy and calm, and they're coloring. And this girl comes up with this drawing shit. And there's these little shapes floating in it. And I'm like, oh, are those fish? And she's like, oh, no, people. And I'm like, oh, are they swimming? She said, no, die. And I realized that every single one of these people has one of the terrifying horror stories you could ever experience, and not a friend of a friend. These are things that they witnessed like a month earlier. Yeah. So I'm just there trying to be observed, like letting people order me around, go do this and help out. But I always had that feeling of what if this happens again? And everyone said to watch out for it, but no one could explain what I'm actually watching out for because there's no warning signs. And then one day, as I was kind of hauling stuff in a wheelbarrow, this old man sitting on a rock is kind of like sitting there mumbling to himself. And he looks at me and he says, watch the animals. And I'm like, what does that mean? you can tell like every syllable this man says, it's like hard for him to say, but he says, the animals knew. Before the wave came, all the dogs started barking, monkeys started howling, all their cats ran away. On the mainland, the elephants went to the top of the mountain. They headed for higher ground. All the animals were acting strangely. They knew, but we didn't listen. Watch the animals. And I kind of filed that away in the back of my head. And that brings us back to that moment that I woke up. I wasn't sure what I was seeing at first because I had left the light on when I fell asleep, but I couldn't exactly see the room because it just looked like these lightning bolts of light shooting through this moving black mass. As my eyes adjusted, I realized that something was flying in front of the light, but there were so many of them, I couldn't even see the room. The walls were covered, the bed was covered, and I looked down and I realized I'm covered too. There's some kind of insect, these black insects crawling all over me. The legs are scraping against me. Their little papery wings are fluttering. They're all in my hair. They're in my face. They're in my beard. They're all over my arms. And I had fallen asleep with no clothes on. They were, let's just say they were everywhere. And I jump up and I realize I'm in the middle of a plague of locusts. I ran outside trying to get away from them. And as I get outside, as far as I can see, this plague of locusts stretches. And I realize I need to run and go somewhere, but I'm standing there butt naked. I'm afraid to go back inside. So I just reach my arm in and grab the first article of clothing I find, which is a pair of shorts that fit me when I moved to Thailand. But I've been working in the sun for like a month doing hard labor. So I've lost a lot of weight. Hung off me. So I literally have to hold them up and I just start running. I don't have my glasses on. I'm completely night blind. I'm not wearing any shoes. But I'm just holding this up running. And then I felt something slap against my leg, something giant and light. And it felt like a human head. And I don't know what, and something hit the other leg and something hit my back. And I'm freaking out. I look down and I see eyes staring up at me. And as I kind of squint and focus my eyes, I realize there are these giant jungle frogs that are just like raining down on me and hitting me. So I just keep running. And then I hear this horrifying sound that just goes, and I look up and I see yellow eyes staring down at me from above. And again, I have to adjust to the light and I see what's up there. And I recognize them immediately. There's this kind of family of like these feral inbred island cats. Like it's an island, so they can't really meet other cats. They're all inbred and they're like these twisted tails and matted fur. And they're all in the trees staring down at me. And what makes them extra scary is that they all have the exact same markings. They're all solid white with like a black swoop of hair above one eye and a little rectangular bit of black fur under their noses. So we all called them Hitler cats, which is funny in the daytime. But when you're standing in the dark staring at you and howling, it's terrifying. And that was extra terrifying because that was the moment that I realized the animals are acting strangely. And this is not only the sign of a tsunami, plague of locusts, that's like biblical end of days stuff.
Plague of
like
locusts, frogs rain of falling frogs from the right sky. The we're getting real into Moses plague Hitler, type situation.
Hitler cats. Hitler that's cats a new one, but
is not in the Bible, but not great in that situation. So I am just like, this is the apocalypse. I need to do something. I need to find some people. And I look around, there's all these cabins, but none of the lights are on. There's no one around. And I realize, oh my God, did they already evacuate without me? Like, am I the last one to know about this? So I just go running. The caves are like deep in the center of the island, surrounded by trees. So I'm just running through this, no lights, running through this forest, no glasses. I can't see. There's branches hitting me in the face, like cutting me. I'm running with no shoes. There's these sharp rocks that are cutting open my feet and I can barely hold these shorts up. And then I reach the end of the forest and I see the beach. And I see everyone is out at the bars and the clubs. And I realize they don't know. It's Friday night. That's the night that everyone, like they've been working and doing volunteer work. They're all go out to relax. And they're all just hanging out, having fun. They have no idea that this is happening. And I don't know what to tell them. But I run up and I'm like, I need to find someone that I know and like get them on my side first. But again, I'm night blind. So I have to go up to every individual person, every bar and like get 6 inches from their face and kind of like squint my eye. Like, no, I don't know you. Go to the next person. And everyone's just staring at me and like looking at me like I'm this weirdo. And I realize, like, I look down at myself and I realize I'm sitting there almost completely naked, except for these pair of shorts that are doing nothing. My face is all covered in bloody scratches. My legs are just soaked in this combination of mud and blood. My hair is all frazzled. I look like something is very wrong with me. I look around, I see a guy that I vaguely know. Like, I've met this guy. I don't know his name, but I've spoken to him. And I'm like, this is the guy I need to get on my side. I run up to him and I'm like, look, man, I was up there. I explained the locusts, the rain of frogs, the Hitler cats and trees, the apocalypse. And this guy like listens to it. He nods and he stands up and he goes, everybody. This dude is wasted. And I'm like, no one believes me. There's no way I can explain this to anyone. I'm the only one that knows this is happening. And like, my heart is beating. This is the most terrifying moment of my life. And I'm like, I need to do something. And I remember the only other piece of advice people gave me is that before the waves go up, they go down. If you watch for when the ocean recedes, that's when it's time to run to higher ground. Now, I don't know what higher ground I'm going to run to. We're on an island. It's flat. But I'm like, I'm going to watch. And then when the water goes down, then they're going to listen. And I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to be in it together. So I decided I was the one that was going to have to hold post all night. And I went and I sat on the beach and I stared at the water. And again, there are no lights here. I am night blind. I have no glasses. So I'm just squinting and staring at the island, just watching for the tiniest little glints of moonlight in the waves to know that it's still there. I just stared and stared. And the next thing I saw was darkness. And then I had that moment again where the real world intrudes on the dream because I've fallen asleep. I see nothing but blackness, but I feel my face is like buried in hot sand. And I wake up and open my eyes and my face is indeed buried in hot sand. I'm on the beach. I roll over and I look up. It's morning. The sun is shining in the sky. People are walking by, going off to work to do their volunteer work for the day and like trying to avert their eyes. I look down and realize my shorts have long since given up trying to cover anything. I'm just laying on the beach, pair of shorts around my knees and nothing else, covered in sand and blood and mud, looking like I've had a real rough night. Everything is fine. There's been no tsunami. There's been no apocalypse. No one else has any idea that anything happened. I have no idea what's going on. I pull up the shorts. I walk back to my hut. Every surface is covered in dead locusts. I don't know what to do. I put on my clothes and I go to where I'm supposed to work that day. And that afternoon, I go up to the old man sitting on the same rock. I'm like, what are you doing? What happened? And I have never seen anyone laugh that hard in my life. So apparently on this island, there is a specific breed of insect that does exactly that once a year. They only live for one night. So they all wake up and then they breed to lay eggs for the next generation. And usually they go deep in the woods to do this unless some idiot falls asleep with the light on because he's tired while everyone else is partying on the beach. And they all rush into his cabin. And then when that happens, all the frogs come out for the free bug buffet. And then the Hitler cats get upset that the bugs and frogs are all over the place and they head to trees to get away from it. So I did not in any way survive the apocalypse. What I survived was a self-inflicted insect orgy that I completely misunderstood and made a fool of myself. Now, this was a very small island with a very small community called Kopipi. Not many people there. So this story did not die down. Everybody remembered this, but two good things did come out of it. Number one is that no one had ever seen that old man that happy. He'd been through a lot, and this idiot American making a fool of himself was the funniest thing he'd ever heard. And number two, even though it didn't actually happen, I knew in that moment that I had faced down the apocalypse and survived.
There are some moments in life where you realize that you're not necessarily the main character of your own story, but a very interesting side character in someone else's. You definitely made that dude's day. I remember in high school, I would get home and like take a nap as soon as I got home. And it was like, you get home at maybe 3 p.m. and you sleep until maybe 5 or 6. And I remember just how disorienting it was to do in the winter because it would be dark out by like 5:36 and you wouldn't know whether it was 5:30 a.m. or p.m. I'm like, did I sleep all the way through the night? I'm getting up for school another day or is the evening just starting? And the fact that you had such an experience just waking up disoriented, you thought you were going to have to be the Paul Revere of the apocalypse for these people. They're like, they don't know. They don't know, but it's coming.
I think it's kind of the ideal, like, terrifying situation, though, because I had, like, the most terrifying thing you can experience. But in the end, it became a comedy just because I was dumb.
I mean, I doubt I would have or anyone would have fared better in that situation.
Speaking of waking up disoriented, I used to travel around Korea to go to film festivals like almost every weekend. And instead of getting hotel, I'd go to like their all night screenings. You know, they'd show just the weirdest movies they had from like midnight to 6 a.m. And I'd just watch until I fell asleep. sleep in the chair, get up and go about my day. And so one day I did that. I fall asleep and then I woke up. And again, you wake up, you don't know where you are. You know, you're sleeping in this weird position in a chair. So you don't even know that you were sleeping. You don't know where you are. And I just wake up in a movie theater. You know, you understand a movie theater unless you don't know you're in one when you wake up. And while I was asleep, the film that it switched over to was a documentary about sex change operations in which they filmed the incisions and things being done, nothing wrong with that. Unless you don't know you're watching a movie. And in that brief second, you think there's a giant in front of you with a medical procedure being done. And I woke up and I screamed so loud. And then I realized where I was. And I look around. I'm like, oh, no, everyone here thinks I'm like homophobic or something. I'm like, no, I was just very spooky for a moment. I'm sorry.
It's very startling. Yeah, speaking for myself, like I'm very squeamish during any medical procedure, like a kidney's being removed. It freaks me out to see it.
I'm comedian David Race in Los Angeles. I host a celebrity-filled paranormal talk show like no other. Monstrosity has great guests answering weird questions. You won't believe the combo of celebrities and paranormal experts who've been on this show. I guarantee you'll like Monstrosity, or you get your time back. Go to monstrositypodcast.com right now and take a look.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it, but just in that moment, I didn't know that's what I was looking at.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've, like I said, moving to a new country every year, and like, I'm an author, so I write books about experiences. I've fainted on top of Mount Kilimanjaro. I was almost eaten by lions in the Maasai Mara. I was thrown out of a train in India. Like, all these scary things have happened to me, but like, because I'm a writer, none of it freaks me out because I'm just thinking like, oh, I'm gonna make a book out of this. I'm thinking about it from the outside, but that experience that I had on that island just, that was one in the moment where I couldn't even think about like, from an outside perspective. I was just like, the world is ending.
Yeah, I can't imagine having that fear.
The other story that I had, this is a story that my mother has told me my whole childhood. She insists it's true. I'm just relaying what my mother told me. So my grandfather died before I was born. And she always talks about how this very strange moment where when he died, you know, it wasn't expected. She was out with her sister. And this is obviously pre-cell phones, pre any sort of wireless communication. And they're just hanging out somewhere. And then all of a sudden, her sister, my Aunt Linda, freezes and says, we got to go. Dad just died. My mom's like, what are you talking about? She's like, I don't know. I just know. And they rushed home and they found out that their father had died. And there was no explanation for how she knew this. Years later, when I was born, my mother was always sad that I never got to meet her father. And then there was one night where she was asleep and all of a sudden she heard this toy piano in my room. And she's like, what is Ryan doing awake? Why is he up playing it? And she walked in and see what I'm doing. I got the lights on, which is weird because I couldn't really reach the lights. And she sees me at this tiny toy piano playing. And she goes, Ryan, what are you doing? And I said, Mom, this is not a piano, right? And she's like, what are you talking about? This is a piano. That man said with a piano. And she froze because her father pronounced the word piano. He always called it a piano, which was this idiosyncrasy that they all thought was funny. He always said the word piano. But I had obviously never heard that. And I'm like, that man said this was a piano. And she froze and she's like, what man? I go, that old man that was in my room. And she didn't know what to say. So she just kind of said, okay, well, let's get back to bed and we'll play piano in the morning. And then she just kind of tucked me in and went back to bed and like couldn't sleep all night. Years later, something like that happened again where I was a little bit older, but she was asleep. And then she woke up and then she saw her father sitting on the end of the bed. He was holding a photograph that she kept on her mirror in her bedroom of her and her father together. And he's sitting there looking at it. And she woke up and she's like, well, this must be like one of those dreams where you know you're dreaming. But she just started talking to him. However the conversation went, she ended up saying, I wish you could have met Ryan. And he goes, oh, I have. And I look forward to meeting your daughter too. And she's like, I don't have a daughter. And he goes, not yet. And she goes, oh, no, I've been to the doctor. They said that's impossible. He goes, yeah, okay.
Well.
And then they talked a little bit. She fell back asleep. And when she woke up, the photo of her and her father that had been in the mirror was now set on the nightstand next to her. And she went to the doctor and found out she's pregnant with my sister. That's what she claims. That's the story she claims. I'm not sure I believe that one.
No, that's amazing. We've also had other episodes of the show where family members that have passed, specifically the parents of women that have had children, have moments mm-hmm. where it seems like those parents that have passed will come in and maybe visit with them. It'd be one thing if it was just one person. It'd be one thing if it was two, but I think we're up to like four. I think there's something about motherhood that makes you a little more in tune with maybe the mechanics of the universe or something to do with bringing a life into the world. It just opens you up in a way that not a lot of other things do. As somebody that's traveled the world and seen so many different cultures and ways of living, do you feel like there is maybe a certain spirituality to places in the world that there might not be in other places, or even that there might be more to those stories than just, you know, conjecture or coincidence?
With all the places I've gone, all the things I've seen, I think that there's so much interesting things to the world that I don't need to believe in things that I see no evidence for.
Yeah.
The afterlife, it's not something I necessarily believe in, but I know that my mother had that experience, and it could just be what she's thinking about, what she's doing. She didn't remember taking it off. Maybe I heard her telling a story about her father saying piano and had a dream about it. It seems like a lot of the stories we hear about that, there are other explanations. I'm not saying it's impossible that the afterlife or ghosts exist. I just know that if there's something out there that we don't understand, it's not necessarily going to be the same version that we hear in stories or anything without evidence. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I do also think your brain is like a computer in and of itself. You start calculating probabilities for certain things, and people have dreams that might predict something that's going to happen in their lives.
Your mind thinks about all kinds of weird stuff. You just forget about the stuff that didn't come to pass.
Absolutely. How much of it's relevant to the plot, you'll find out when it happens.
Yeah. Everyone I know has heard every single one of my stories a million times. That's the one I don't really tell because I'm like, I don't know what to do with it.
And but it also happened while you were a child. Like you weren't necessarily... Yeah. Online at that point yet.
My only memory of it is my mother telling the story.
And I find it even more interesting that having traveled the world, you haven't encountered more of it, but maybe it's not something you're looking for.
Well, I mean, like I said, I've had many scary experiences, but since I'm a writer, I kind of turn them into stories. I've written horror stories and stories based on horror. I'm inspired by even the experiences that aren't scary. I figure out like, oh, this is an interesting location, an interesting experience, but there's no beginning, middle, and end. And I'll be like, hey, let's set a horror story there or something. Yeah. Like the book I have coming out next month, Student Ambassador of the Silver City, is based on my grandfather's hometown in Mexico, this really cool city, Zacatecas, where the whole city was built on a mine. And as the city grew bigger and the mine grew bigger, they kind of overlapped and they had to shut down the mine. So since they shut it down, they turned it to a tourist destination where you can take a train in there and like crawl around inside the mines. And it's like this really spooky place, but like nothing actually spooky happened there. So I just turned it into a fictional story about monsters in the mines. I love taking experiences that kind of give you that little chill, but that's not going to give the audience the chill. So how can I turn it into fiction to make it a little spooky?
Was the fear there that if they tunnel too much, that it might collapse inward, create sinkholes?
Yeah, basically, when they started the town, it's this tiny mining town, this tiny mine, and they just kept both growing, growing, growing. And they're like, oh, wait, if we mine anymore, the city is going to fall down into a pit. So they had to completely shut it down. My book is more a reverse Scooby-Doo where the hero realized, oh, wait, I'm the bad guy. I'm the evil developer. Whenever I tell stories about horrific things, I always try and look at it from the horrific things point of view. There's novels that I'm working on that are like, what if you told it from the monster's point of view? What told Terminator from the robot's point of view that everyone's scared of something? And, you know, we look at the world and all these terrifying things, but it's rare to find actual evil in the world. It does exist, but a lot of the times the things and the people doing the most evil think they're doing what's right. No one sees themselves as the villain. And that's what makes it more scary, is that someone could feel completely justified in doing the most horrifying things. You know, doesn't mean they're right, but someone that feels justified to do something horrible to you is even more scary than someone who wants to be a villain.
Ryan, it's been a pleasure, man. Thank you very much. I appreciate you being a fan of the show. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you making time for me.
Thank you so much for bringing me on and letting me share some real spooky stories.
Do you have any advice to give as a creator? To an up-and-coming one?
I think the most important thing is to tell the stories that only you can tell. Mm. If you're trying to make like superhero comics are popular, let's make superhero comics. This kind of movie's popular, let's make this kind of movie. It's not going to work out for you because there's a million people making that thing that are passionate about it, but there's some story that you're the only one that can tell it. And if you tell it, you're going to have no competition. So get out there and make the work that only you can make. If you want to check out my work, you can find it at ryanestrada.com and see the weird stuff I make. But just don't worry about that. Make your own weird stuff.
Now those were some frightfully fun stories. Howdy everybody, it's me, your host Danny. And I wanted to let you in on something special. You might have noticed that when I introduce the show, I say we are the Hometown Horrors Podcast. That's because there will always be at least three people in each episode. Me, the person who wants to hear a good story, the guest, the teller of a good story, and you, the listener, that takes that story and carries it with you out into the world. And we make up a special kind of trinity. We are the Hometown Horrors Podcast. And if you ever want to graduate from listener to guest, reach out to us via our handle on Instagram, hometown_horrors_podcast. Our email is thehometownhorrorspodcast@gmail.com or via text or phone call at 571-358-8880, which FYI is not my personal number, but give it a ring. I'll get back to you. Because if there's anything I've learned from doing the podcast is that everybody has a story, and that story deserves to be heard. On your number one source for the most spine-tingling, gut-wrenching, insomnia-inducing stories around, the Hometown Horrors Podcast.